you have to think about the big things that really matter to you. And that means taking a step back at times and asking yourself, what are the big projects? What are the big life goals that matter to me? And you have to be really clear about that. And the reason I say you have to be really clear about that is that there are a million little things that will encroach on the time that you must take to build those bigger things. And if you're not clear about those bigger things and you don't build a fence around them and you don't create somewhat of a plan in your head of, I want to do this by this point or have this thing or be more this way, if you don't put that in your mind and set that intention, you're never going to have, in my experience, those other things come to fruition. And that is one of the most important things that I've learned along the way.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Role Models Podcast, a podcast where we host candid conversations with inspiring women about their personal journeys, their career histories, and all the valuable lessons and learnings they've picked up along the way. My name is David Noel, and I'm the co-founder of Role Models, the series of events and this very podcast that I started with my co-founder and friend, Isabel. Our guest today is Rebecca Jarvis, who is ABC News Chief Correspondent for Business, Technology, and Economics. And she's also the host of the fantastic podcast called No Limits, where every week Rebecca interviews influential women. And if you follow the Role Models podcast closely, you'll remember that we recommended Rebecca's podcast as a podcast we love in one of the previous episodes. So this time, I'm excited that we're turning the tables on Rebecca, and I invited her to share her story and some of the insights of her journey and career. Like, for example, how she created career opportunities for herself by finding what she calls a side door, or ways that she influenced her bosses to get the chances and the breaks that she deserves, or some of the life hacks that she has learned to make long-term goals achievable. In the No Limits podcast, Rebecca asked all of her guests one question. What is the worst advice that you've ever received? So we put that question to her as well. Stay tuned to hear her answer. Shout out to our patrons for this episode who support this podcast with $10 per episode. First, we have Megan Quinn, general partner at Spark Capital, and she was previously, of course, a guest on this podcast. Megan supports the organization code2040.org. And then we have Anna Carolina, who is a leadership coach based out of Berlin, and yet you can find on truthcircles.com. Thanks to Megan and Anna and all of our other patrons. This is the Role Models Podcast. Thank you for listening and enjoy today's episode number 32 with Rebecca Jarvis. Rebecca, welcome to the Role Models Podcast.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I love what you're doing.
Thank you so much. And I think the admiration is mutual, because the reason that I wanted to talk to you today was because I've been following the No Limits podcast, of which you are a host and managing editor. I've been following the podcast since you launched it in January 2017. And when we introduced our podcast, the Role Models podcast, in June of 2017, I saw some similarities. So it's been really interesting to follow how you developed a podcast, a No Limits podcast, and it's nice to turn the tables now, because now I get to interview you.
I can't wait. I'm very excited, and I love how you do it with all of your guests. I love the questions you ask your guests, so I'm excited to have the conversation that we have coming ahead.
Cool, let's do this. So Rebecca, you're aside from being a host and the editor of the podcast that we mentioned, you're also the chief correspondent for business, technology, and economics at ABC News. And I cannot wait to dive into this broad area of things you look after and that you report on day in, day out. And I wanted to kick off with one question that I'm stealing from your podcast, because it's one question that you ask every guest on your podcast, which I really love, because it's something that we typically don't really talk about. And that's the question around, like, what's the worst piece of advice that you've received throughout your career? Do you know? Have you ever thought about it for yourself?
Well, I do think about it a lot, David. I definitely spend a lot of time thinking about that question because it's something that we ask every guest at the end of every episode. And in particular, part of why I wanted to ask that question is because so many podcasts, so many interviews with people about their careers focus on the best advice. And sometimes that best advice starts to skew a little bit generic at a certain point. So I really wanted to think about it in a practical way. And for me, one of the things along my career, and I know a lot of your listeners are maybe two or three jobs into their career. And for me, the moment that I was at that point in my career, some of the advice that I was getting, and it was very, very well-intentioned advice, but it was for me to think of myself more broadly. My background, I started out studying economics in college, law in college. I was always interested in the markets, in technology, in entrepreneurs, and how people were building businesses. And at that moment in my life, I was getting feedback from a lot of very well-intentioned people, mentors, guides in my life to try and broaden myself. They were saying, once you become more broad, you become bigger, you become more known, more people will hear what you have to say and care about what you have to say if you're talking about a lot of different things. But I knew, as much as I have plenty of other interests, I love music, I love theater, I love some reality television, to be honest, that wasn't for me. That wasn't the thing that was motivating me to get into journalism in the first place. My major motivation to get into journalism in the first place was to hold Wall Street and to hold executives accountable and to make sure that the consumer has the very best information they possibly have. Plus, it was just my own curiosity around new technology and what it means for our world and how things are changing. So that bad advice, while coming from the best of intentions, was this push on to me to really broaden myself. And I'm thankful, you know, I sort of dabbled a little bit in a more broad sense, but I'm really thankful that I have stuck to this core. And I think it's part of why I ended up launching No Limits in the first place, because I really cared about really bringing more transparency, as you do here, around careers and how people develop their careers and the trade-offs along the way, and looking at this question about success and what does it really mean to be successful and how does success look in the many different facets of what, you know, there are so many different ways you can be successful, as you know, as your guests know and the listeners know, and looking at the multitude of ways, rather, that people come to that and find that in their own lives.
This is great. I have a few follow-ups on this. So do you have a way to, so do you have a recommendation for effective ways to ask for career advice?
I think that it's about thinking about the advice as multiple steps along the way. Something that a number of women have talked about actually with me on the podcast is this idea that if you are only asking for the big things, if that's when you reach out to your circle of friends or your mentors only on the big stuff, then you're missing opportunities to have conversations and develop relationships along the way. So the key is to maintain those relationships and to build with people outside of your direct sphere of influence. So for example, I have a number of mentors and friends that I turn to that are beyond just the media journalism career. I have friends in many different industries that I'm always asking for little pieces of advice along the way, as opposed to just thinking about the big thing. Of course, there are going to be the big things. Do I change jobs? Do I launch a business? Do I speak up in my office if I'm feeling like something isn't going right? Those are the bigger sort of, higher stakes questions. And those you definitely want to reach out. But the only way that you get to those bigger conversations, and in particular, get to them with the people who you can really trust, is by having more conversations along the way, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the success and different ways of defining success. You're now at a stage in your career where, you know, you might say it's like you're quite accomplished, you know, in the news media, you've had different stations throughout your career, which we can talk about. And you now have, you know, the chief correspondent and you're the host of your own podcast. So how do you personally define success? And has that definition changed over time?
That's a great question. So yes, it's changed over time. And the way that I would define it at this moment in my life is it's all encompassing. It's the full thing. Having the family and the friends and the rich life beyond just the daily routine of work, but also in terms of my career, for me, success is doing it my way. It's doing it on my terms. It's building it and being entrepreneurial and not just simply looking to examples from the past and saying, oh, I'd love to follow in her footsteps or his footsteps. It's really for me about trying to identify the things that I genuinely care most about and trying to find ways to build those things. The podcast, again, is a perfect example of that, because when I started my podcast at ABC News, no one else was doing that. There weren't other podcasts going on. And I just thought it was something that I had been asking to do for an extended period of time. And for me, and now, by the way, there are lots of great podcasts at ABC News that you should absolutely check out. My colleague Dan Harris has a wonderful one. Robin Roberts has a wonderful podcast. So some really great, great content. But it wasn't necessarily there initially. And I think that you can limit yourself if all you're looking at is the world as it is today. You really can limit your opportunities. And I've always thought about finding opportunity. One thing I say a lot is find a side door. The opportunity that is already there is often something that everybody is rushing towards. But if you can find a side door or an opportunity that others have yet to figure out, and you can build that, to me, that's the best of all worlds.
I want to loop back to the entrepreneurial piece that you mentioned. But before that, you said that you love music. What's some of the recent music that you love?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm a big hip hop fan. So I'm a big Drake, Kanye West, Jay-Z, Beyonce fan, Rihanna. I take this dance class and they play a lot of music that I'm not familiar with in the dance class, but I always really enjoy a good hip hop beat for dance.
Who's the musician that you would love to have on No Limits?
Oh, I mean, I think Rihanna would be a fantastic guest. There's so many awesome female musicians, but because I said Rihanna already, let's stick to Rihanna. She'd be a really fascinating person to talk to.
Great answer. Mine would be Lorde, by the way.
Lorde. Oh, you know what? It's interesting you say that. So I was talking to an intern yesterday, and we were talking about musicians, and she mentioned Lorde. I'm really into that idea. She was also talking about some of the female hip hop artists and rappers of our time. Mm-hmm. So Nicki Minaj, Cardi B. Curious to know what your guests would think of that if we were able to get one of those on.
This is great. Let's aim for that and let's aim high.
Yeah, let's do it.
You mentioned the entrepreneurial, element of the way that you define success, and I was curious to know if that entrepreneurial component of you, of your success and of you as a person, is a gene? Is this something that you were born with, or is it something that you've developed over time? And if so, where would you place that?
Well, I think I grew up in a home that was very entrepreneurial, that my parents encouraged both my sister and I to help be a part of change, to change things for the better. We did a lot of community service and a lot of work in our neighborhood. I grew up in the inner city of Minneapolis, Minnesota, and we would frequently be cleaning the boulevards and going out and serving meals. And we spent a lot of time really getting involved as kids. And my parents would bring us to work and all of that. And I think that sort of laid the foundation for me to be more entrepreneurial as a human. Also, my mom is a journalist, and I really do think that the job of a journalist can be very entrepreneurial. You go out, you find your stories, you go after people in terms of reaching out to them and getting in touch with them. So it is a very self-motivating, in my opinion, job. And I saw that from a really young age. And I remember as a kid, my mom would always ask questions. She'd do interviews sometimes on the phone, and I'd hear her doing the interview, and she'd be asking questions, and she'd get off the phone, and I'd say, Mom, the question that you just asked, are you allowed to ask that question? And she would say, Becky — I went by Becky throughout my childhood and still do with most of my friends and family — but she would say, Becky, it's my job to ask those questions. It's my job to ask the difficult questions. That's the purpose of a journalist. And I was always attracted to that level of being able to be completely curious and having this ability to pick up the phone and call anyone and ask anyone any question. Now, they don't necessarily answer the question, but the job is to ask and to keep pushing.
So asking questions is not only an important skill for a journalist, but it's, you know, as we've learned, also an important skill for any leader in any organization. Do you think you can learn how to ask great questions, or how do you practice becoming great at asking questions?
I think you can absolutely learn how to ask great questions. And I think a lot of it comes from being a really good listener and listening to what people have to say and looking for as you do a great job of here on your show, listening for guidance to what people are saying and thinking about what the natural follow-up is. There are various reasons for why we ask questions. One is just pure curiosity, being inquisitive and going after getting inside of a person's mind. Then there's the more sort of investigative approach, asking hard-hitting questions. And I think those hard-hitting questions in particular, one of the things that I have done throughout my career is just listen to other journalists whom I really respect, and there are lots of them here at ABC News, listening to them conduct their interviews and thinking about how they structure it, what they include in the question, what they don't include in the question, and really trying to emulate that as I go forward and practice journalism as well. But I also think it's a matter of trial and error. So anybody out there who's thinking, I'm not good at asking questions, I mean, look, most journalists, everybody who starts out, they start out at the beginning. They might have some, you know, maybe some natural propensity to be a little bit stronger or not, but no one starts out in this profession perfect. And by the way, I don't think that anybody is perfect. We should all be working every single day to be better at that job. And so I would say to anyone out there who's thinking about this, watch the people who you really respect. Think about how they're structuring questions. And then think about what you naturally are curious about and care about. I think one of the things that, especially early on in careers, that I see young journalists, and I did this myself, that if you start out and you're trying to like crack this code of the perfect question, you're not necessarily coming at it from the right direction. Instead, if you think about it from the standpoint of, if I was consuming this information, what would I care about most? What question would come to mind after the guest, the source said whatever they said? And think about it from that standpoint, as opposed to, I'm going to ask the very best question on the face of the earth.
What's your favorite question that nobody asks you?
Well, what's the worst advice you ever received? That's a good one. I think that in general, for me, what I love when people ask me questions, and what I love especially when viewers ask me questions, is when they ask me about something that I've covered, because it shows that they're engaged with the material and they want to know and understand more. And genuinely, one of the biggest motivating factors for me is helping people learn and grow and understand, and being a teacher, especially when it comes to the financial information. You know, I started in this industry during the financial crisis, and I was at CNBC at the time, which was the major television news outlet where people were getting most of their information in the financial crisis. And we were first to talk about Bear Stearns going under and Bank of America Securities buying Merrill Lynch. And I was standing outside of Lehman Brothers when they fell. And so much of that that experience of seeing what was truly the worst of times for so many people really instilled in me the value of getting the story right and helping people, everyday people who had nothing to do with the financial industry other than the fact that they might own a home or have a 401k. It really instilled in me the importance and the value of helping, in particular, that portion of the population to get really good, accurate information, because there are so many snake oil salesmen and charlatans out there that are unfortunately making money off of a lot of people and finding ways to take what kind of appear to be on the surface complicated subjects and then making money off the fact that there's complexity there. And for me, I really, really care about helping the viewer, the listener, to break that down so that they don't feel as afraid of the information and they don't get duped by somebody who's just out to make a fast buck.
I want to go back because you mentioned earlier that you started off not in journalism and that did different things before ending up in journalism. And I was curious to know how you thought about a profession or a career before you actually started off your first job. Like, what was your sense of deciding which route to take or which journey to go on?
So for me, journalism was always somewhere. It was always something I was really inclined towards, given my mom and her background. But I had other interests as well. And I went to the University of Chicago, and they have one of the best economics programs in the world. And I started studying economics there and constitutional law. And as I was mining my way through college, a couple of things came up. So one, my mom gave me some great advice, which was that if I was going to become a journalist at some point, I didn't necessarily have to study journalism to do it. And second of all, her advice to me was find a topic in an area that you love that you can become an expert in and really learn that area. And that was great advice because I was really interested in economics and really interested in law. And so I learned those and then started coming out of college practicing primarily the business side. The economics degree, I have to say, an economics degree, while it was a great learning experience, it's not something that I applied on an everyday basis in investment banking, which was my first job out of college. But it helped me think. It helped me think about how to think about finance and numbers and accounting. And so I got into investment banking in part because it interested me, in part because it was something I thought I could really use this in the future if I decide to go down the journalism path. And finally, I got into it because I graduated with a lot of student loans, and I knew that if I went straight to journalism, there really wasn't going to be a way for me to pay those student loans off, at least not anytime soon. And I made this choice at that point that I would give myself a couple of years that I would hopefully, through investment banking, make some money so that I could get out of debt or at least partially out of debt. And then at that point, a couple years down the road, I'd reevaluate and see what made sense.
So you said your mother is a journalist as well. And that in what way, in what capacity has she influenced your path to become a journalist?
Well, I think my grandfather also happened to be a journalist. They're both print journalists. My mom's a columnist at Reuters, but I would say that she influenced me. I mean, she and my father, two biggest influences in my life, hands down. Her just drive to, I mean, I'm thinking back, I'm getting all of these visuals as we're talking. My sister and I used to go to the office with her all the time. It wasn't take your kid to work day. It was kind of like take your kids to the office on the weekend because you're picking up tapes of interview recordings. And back then it used to be my mom would have these boxes of tapes from all the interviews that she had conducted. And I remember looking through the boxes and just thinking like, wow, these are all these conversations that you've had with all of these really interesting people. And I think there was that portion too of justice, that being a journalist, you can help convey the truth, that you can help get people the right information. And I liked that. I had a sense of justice that was a really important job for humanity.
Do you have an idea about the top three skills that make a great journalist? Not a good journalist, a great journalist.
Number one, hands down, is curiosity. You have to be curious. You have to be inquisitive. You have to have a million more questions than what the world is answering for you in front of you. Second, I think it's really important to be a strong writer and to be able to communicate in written form. And finally, I think you have to have a certain amount of grit, a fearlessness, because it's not always going to be pleasant. There are definitely people who are going to tell you that you're wrong. There are definitely people who are going to tell you that you're right. My mom used to say to me, you know, you've done a good job when you have equal parts of people telling you you're a genius and an absolute idiot. And because then you know that you really found, you struck a chord. Because no one, if you ever looked at Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, you know that we do not universally agree on pretty much anything. And the most important thing is to be willing to keep going out there and keep trying to be stronger and better every single day.
Has the notion of being a journalist for you changed? Like when you went into journalism, did you have a set idea of what it would be like? And has that idea changed over time? Or in some sense, did you develop, what kind of journalism values did you create for yourself versus them being imposed by the news organization or the media organization that you're in?
Well, I think that the values, there are some fundamental values. Accuracy and attention to detail are fundamental, and they have been fundamental in my career from day one. That was instilled in me. That was something my mom would say to me, even as a kid, all the time, about the importance of that. I think that the business of journalism, the biggest change in the course of my career is the actual business of journalism. When I started, which was pre-financial crisis, 2006, 2007, we didn't have all of the social media that we have today. We didn't really focus on what the website for the news organization was doing. It was pretty much what's happening on the TV and what's happening on the radio, at least in my experience, and also in the print world, what's happening in the newspaper. And now there are so many additional outlets. And I think that there's both pros and cons to all of this. On the pro side, the additional outlets mean that you have even more access to the people who are consuming your content. That means there can be a conversation. You can build a community, just like you've built a community here on this podcast. I love the fact that I'm building this community with No Limits and the listeners who enjoy my podcast. So that's a wonderful element to it. On the flip side, it's also something that can become much more all-consuming. And I think that with social media today, while I love it as a resource and this ability and the ability to build community with it, it also presents a challenge of how involved is your life in social media? How much of your life is taken over by this thing that's sort of happening outside of you? And I think that's just from a that to me is more of a question that I'm asking myself frequently as a person, just how much of my life can be my real life. And I try and make as much of it as possible about what's happening here, as in where I'm standing, versus what's happening there in the palm of my hand on the phone.
I think that's a great cue, because one thing I was wondering while preparing for the interview was that you're a leading woman in the news media, and so you wake up to the news, right? And yes. it becomes immediately part of your job, as opposed to news consumers who wake up and consume a variety of different news or do other things as their morning routine. But to you wake up to your job right away. How much of your day is expected versus unexpected, or predictable versus unpredictable?
I would say almost 100% unpredictable. I mean, I know that when I'm waking up, for example, when I'm getting up at like 4:30 in the morning, I know probably that I'm going to Good Morning America, and I know very likely the story that I'm covering there, but there's always the chance that there's some sort of breaking news. And that's something I'm always looking at, whether it's just to give you a sense of the last 24 hours, even of my life. So I don't know how closely you followed the Elizabeth Holmes Theranos story, but Elizabeth Holmes was hailed as the youngest female billionaire in the world and just was charged just overnight by the SEC with a massive fraud for her Theranos business. So that was the story that I was coming into Good Morning America to do today. But I was also simultaneously working on a story about Toys R Us, which is closing all of its U.S. stores. I was also working on a story about a new appointment in the Trump administration to the economic advisors. And I was also working on a story about Walmart competing with Amazon, because now Walmart is rolling out to 100 cities in the United States, about 40% of the country, rolling out delivery for groceries, which is a huge swing at Amazon because Amazon's business has really been lately focused on that world of groceries since they acquired Whole Foods. So there's a lot of different areas and they don't necessarily even intersect. So I'm focusing on all these things, sending emails to sources, calling the companies, putting out notes to ABC News as the person who covers these topics, letting people know my analysis and where I think these things are heading, and also just having to stay on top of anything else that could be thrown into it. I mean, if the market, for example, right now, if it jumps or sells off in a dramatic way, I'm on top of that as well.
Amazing. Then that's only for 24 hours. That's not even 24 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
So I imagine this to be, so the broad range of topics, right? I imagine this to be in a newsroom where you have teams of journalists and reporters and editors contributing to the news that we report. So in some sense, you have a managerial role or you have a collaborative role to make sure that the news that you end up reporting on air or on a podcast is accurate. Can you take us behind the scenes of how you manage that day, and how do you work with others, and what's the flow like, and how do you ensure that you can in some way, even if it's an unfocused news day, how you can remain focused and oriented around the truth?
Well, I would say this. So when I have something specific, if I'm getting ready for a Good Morning America story, I am insanely focused on whatever that particular story is. So while there's a lot of different things happening, I find myself drilling down heavily on whatever it is that I truly need to drill down on in that particular moment. And I have an incredible team, Elizabeth Russo, who works with my team with No Limits and helps us with all of our public relations. I have a research assistant, Annie Osakwe, who oftentimes will be putting together research for me and sending me things ahead of an interview. For example, I'll say to her, look, I think there's this story out there and this story. Can you send me those stories and any notes that you have on those stories? I have a producer, Taylor Dunn, who really works around the clock with me, really around the clock. I mean, this morning she was up with me at like 5 a.m. I was emailing her about a story, and last night we were emailing about a story at midnight. So she truly isn't around the clock, there all the time helping me. And then Michelle Boncardo, who's the editor of my No Limits podcast. So she, what we do, for example, with the podcast, we'll have a conversation just like you and I are having a conversation here. After the conversation, I will take that transcript from the conversation. I'll go through the transcript. I'll highlight portions that I think are really valuable portions that I want to use or highlight as quotes in the future. I also always choose that introductory soundbite, which is something that I think is really impactful that will hopefully make the listener excited to listen to more of the story that is different, ideally, from other conversations that we've had. And I always take that soundbite, that piece of sound, and put it at the beginning of the podcast. And then I will write the sort of introduction the same way that you did your introduction of me here. I'll write the introduction. And then I will go back to the radio studio. I'll track that introduction to the story. And then Michelle Boncardo will take all of those elements once I've pieced them all together and put them on paper. She'll take all of those elements and piece them all together and edit so that our listeners can ultimately hear the full conversation. I should also mention that as a fan of music, I also create the music for the podcast on GarageBand on my phone. iPhones have this GarageBand. Have you ever used the GarageBand on your phone?
I've never used it on the phone. I've used it on my computer, but never on the phone.
Sure.
That's cool.
So yeah, so I like to create music on my phone using GarageBand. So I'll do that and I'll send that to Michelle as well.
That's so cool. So it sounds like every morning, and you said you wake up at 4:30 every morning, and so is it, and then you know you walk into a day and you don't really know what's going to happen. So it almost feels like walking into a storm every day. have you developed or acquired or found life or work hacks that work for you when things don't run as smoothly? as they should?
Well, I wish I could say that I do meditation or something like that. A lot of people have been singing its praises, and it's something I oftentimes think about. I think the one thing that, and it sounds so simple, but it's actually easier said than done, is taking each thing as a single thing. When you start to think about all of it, I have to make dinner, I have to sleep, I have to do the presentation for my boss, I have to go out and find a new job, I'm just throwing out all the things that you might have running around in your head, in the back of your head. Once you make it about all of them at once, you're not clear-headed. I think the best thing you can do is to acknowledge that there are a lot of things happening, but take each thing and strike it off your list and work your way down that list. Another thing, just as a general theme that I am always saying to myself, and again, another easier said than done, is you have to think about the big things that really matter to you. And that means taking a step back at times and asking yourself, what are the big projects? What are the big life goals that matter to me? And you have to be really clear about that. And the reason I say you have to be really clear about that is that there are a million little things that will encroach on the time that you must take to build those bigger things. And if you're not clear about those bigger things and you don't build a fence around them and you don't create somewhat of a plan in your head of, I want to do this by this point, or have this thing, or be more this way. If you don't put that in your mind and set that intention, you're never going to have, in my experience, those other things come to fruition. And that is one of the most important things that I've learned along the way. And it's something both my dad and my husband are really good at sort of checking me on those things, because I'll tell them, here's what I really care about. And they'll remind me as I say yes to something that doesn't really fill into one of those buckets. They'll remind me that, okay, well, it's totally fine that you said yes to this, but there's always going to be a trade-off.
What are those life goals, those big life goals that matter to you?
For me, it's really about building something special with the No Limits community. I'm really... I feel so much excitement and encouragement, and I feel so personally nourished by the conversations that we're having. I think that being a person that has a family and friends that I really value, and having real, true, great relationships with those people is very, very important to me. And in addition, I'm at work in the context of ABC News and what I do here. I really care about looking at, there's a couple of investigative projects that I've been working on that I'm also really excited about.
Is there a job in journalism that you would consider your dream job that one day you want to do?
I'm building it.
Great.
That's what I'm doing right now. Yeah.
That's awesome. I want to talk more about the podcast, and before we jump into your learnings from having published 75 episodes since January last year, you touched on it briefly already, the genesis of the podcast, that there was, at ABC News, there was no one doing any podcast, that, you know, it took a few conversations, probably many conversations, to convince people to try it out. And that, you know, you found that side door. Can you talk a little bit about, can you take our listeners behind the scenes and maybe use the lens on your answer by focusing on how do you influence your bosses to listen to you, that and to give you a chance that it's or to give you the trust to try it out?
Sure. So first off, the reason that I created No Limits was to demystify success and to shine a light on bold and influential women who have been there, done that, and to look at the trade-offs that they faced along the way and the challenges in really specific terms, not just general terms, but really specific terms, how they thought through decision-making, as something that could be useful to anyone who wants to listen, to help guide people and give people a sense like I said earlier, about how success can come in all of these different forms, but also how different decisions can drive you to different places. And getting there with ABC, getting ABC to eventually make it into a podcast, I think just one thing is, you can't give up on the first no. Everybody will say that, but you have to acknowledge the fact that nothing is going to move probably as quickly as you want it to, and to not take that personally and to just keep going for it, keep coming back. I also think highlighting the usefulness of a podcast or whatever it is that you care about to your employer. For me, I know that reaching the No Limits audience with the kind of content that we are doing is incredibly valuable to the audience, which means that it's incredibly valuable to ABC News. And really outlining that for ABC, finding whatever information is out there, I think it's really important when you're pitching something to go out and find as much useful information to make your case as possible. But the number one thing is to keep going back. That is, and it's, I hear this every single day from every entrepreneur, every actor, people who come from every walk of life, those who are the most successful, their number one thing is just work really hard and keep coming back, because you're going to hear no 90% of the time, at least.
You've interviewed 75 women on the podcast, and I was curious to see that, because we've had, I think, 30 episodes here on the Role Models podcast, and I'm starting to see patterns or recurring themes cut through, you know, the different guests we have on the podcast, which is super interesting to see, because they all have such a broad different range of backgrounds and experiences, and it's nice to see there's a few things that come back. From your perspective on having interviewed not only 75 people on a podcast, but probably hundreds more in your capacity as a journalist, what is something, some of the patterns that you see on from guests on No Limits?
So one of the big themes is on the question of worst advice. I think that the worst advice tends to fall into one of three categories. Category one is you get bad advice from somebody who just doesn't get you. They're probably giving you unsolicited advice and they don't really understand where you're coming from, so it's wrong. Second category is somebody who's trying to trip you up. Unfortunately, there are going to be potentially these people along the way who don't have your best interest in mind, and they're going to give you bad advice as a result. The third category, which is, in my experience, the most common category where women and men are getting bad advice, is from those who love and care about them the most. It's the protective advice. It's the don't take a risk because if you take a risk, you might fail advice. And I think that's a really interesting, for me, it's been a really interesting experience to hear this over and over again, because I think it's a reminder, and I hope it's a reminder to listeners, that while the people who love you the most and care about you the most are wonderful to lean on for support along the way, and you definitely should be asking them for advice along the way, but sometimes their best intentions will keep you from exploring things that you really need to at least give yourself a shot and explore. And my mom used to say to me, what's the worst thing that can happen? That's what she said to me all throughout my childhood. And I really do think about that now as I make career choices. If you've got something that you know that you really desperately want to try, and if you recognize that not trying it is going to be in the back of your mind way more than your issues around trying it and it not working out, you got to go for it. You have to give it a shot. And I will say this, every single woman who comes on No Limits has faced failure. Every man I've ever interviewed in my life has faced failure. So the people who you see at the top who are, you know, who, whether they have the most followers on Instagram or they're running a Fortune 500 company or whatever box they fill that you would ideally like to fill someday, that they have faced that failure.
What's your greatest hits failure?
Oh my goodness. I mean, well, there have been plenty of jobs along the way that I didn't get that were, it maybe at the time might have even been my dream job. And they were not easy things in those moments. I felt like a complete failure. I felt like, what's wrong with me that this thing that I've worked so hard for isn't panning out. But when you look at them in the rearview mirror, if you keep going, and that's the number one key, that you can have your couple of days, and I definitely have my couple of days to churn on it and be really frustrated by it. But if you don't let that go and think, okay, new path, new day, it will dog you. But if you do, it will be so far away in the rearview mirror that you won't even be able to think of it. Like, that's when you ask me that question, that's honestly how I think of it. I don't really think that much about any of those things in the past. Everything is what's happening in the future.
What do you see people who are probably maybe a little bit earlier in their career, maybe first, second job, enter journalism? What do you see them? I don't know if wasting energy is the right word, but misallocating a high amount of energy when they should focus it on something else.
Focus on your path. That's my number one thing. Focus on what's in front of you. The minute you start looking around and trying to think about what other people are doing, you're losing sight of whatever cool thing you could be spending your time doing.
Do you have a favorite interviewing story?
Oh, there's so many good ones. I honestly would put in a bucket the No Limits interviews in general. And the reason that I'm really enjoying them is that, like our conversation here, they meander, they go places that you might not have expected. And I love the unexpected. I love it when somebody tells me, as they frequently do, I've never told anyone this before. That's an amazing thing to hear, because you know that you're reaching new territory with a person.
What have you not shared on the podcast yet?
Wait, with what? Other people?
What have you not shared yet? What's the first time you would say on a podcast?
Let's see. What can I give you that I've never shared on the podcast before?
And just to give people an idea,
yes,
right? Like, you've interviewed people like Warren Buffett, Ariana Huffington, which was the first guest on episode one of the No Limits podcast, Jessica Alba, Sheryl Sandberg, Richard Branson, Diane from Furstenberg. So you get to talk to some of the most interesting and arguably successful people in the world. And so you always hear their perspective on life, but it's like now your chance to share a nugget of your life that you haven't shared before.
Well, I think that what I would say is that the truth is that you care, somebody like me, I care so much about what we're doing, what we're building, and there are going to be really tough days along the way in all of that. Like I said earlier, not everything is going to go your way. And there are moments where you do question, am I doing the right thing? Am I making the right choices? And I think that we will never know. No one will ever definitively be able to tell you you're doing exactly the right thing and just stay the course. But what I have used as my guiding principle, especially at this phase of my career, and it's a phase that probably many of your listeners are in as well. Early on in your career, you're just a yes person. You say yes, you do everything, you work hard, you come in earlier than everyone else, you leave after everyone else leaves. But you get to a point where you start to try to do more of the things that you really, really care about. And for me, that's become the guiding principle at this point. Even if things are looking uncertain, because they always are, try to go back to what are the things that really make me excited, nourish me, answer to my curiosity, answer to whatever that thing is inside that drives and motivates me. What are the opportunities that answer to that? And say yes to those opportunities, and you'll already be on the right path.
For people who enter the media world and journalism today, and I think, you know, media and journalism have gone through some massive changes in the past few years, mainly driven by technology and the emergence of social media. What is something that young leaders in journalism ought to do from your perspective to take the media or take the news and take journalism to its next era?
Well, I think number one is you have to adhere to the underlying principles of truth, accuracy, attention to detail. Those are rules that should never be broken as a journalist. But outside of those rules, I think that there are other ways and formulas that can absolutely be broken. And I always say to this, I talk oftentimes to young journalists in classrooms, and the thing that gives them the best outlet right now is that phone in their hand. They can create a video unlike anything that you've ever seen before on the news. They can tell a story, and we've seen this so many different formats. You know, it used to be that you had to just see somebody face forward, facing camera. That's not the way that the news works anymore. When you watch the news, just even the shots, the angles, the music, the sound, all these different factors that people are getting way more creative with today are coming into play. And I would recommend that anybody who is really interested in this think about that. Think about exploring different ways to try things, ways to try things differently.
Yeah, that's great.
Go ahead.
You have one segment that you introduced recently on the No Limits podcast called RJ Answers, RJ for Rebecca Jarvis Answers. Do you have, what's been your experience like to engage the community, to encourage the submission of questions? What are some of the themes you see emerge there from the type of questions that people send in?
Well, I think the biggest questions are career questions, and how do you balance your desires with practicality, and how do you think about big choices like, do I switch jobs? Do I stay the course? Do I listen to what my parents have to say? Do I listen to what my mentors have told me? Those are the key questions.
Great. We're moving on to the last segment, then, and we're already out of time. Here are the last final questions that I have for you that we ask every guest on a podcast and also in our live events that we host here in Berlin and other cities. And the first one would be, what's the one item on your bucket list that you still have to check off?
Well, just in general, I love travel and I'd like to travel a lot more. But the biggest thing at this moment is building No Limits into something that I think it's really worthy of, and creating a conversation and a community around the No Limits podcast.
What's the one destination you would like to travel to?
Oh my gosh. Well, there's two places in the world that are probably my favorite trips ever. I studied abroad in Paris, and it's the city that just will always live in my heart. So I'd love to get back there. And I took a phenomenal trip to Tokyo a while ago, and I would love to go back and explore more of Japan.
Oh, I love Tokyo. Such a great city.
Yeah, it's so cool, right?
Yeah, it's like a different universe.
It is.
This is the Role Models Podcast. Who is your role model?
Well, I've talked a lot about her in the show, but my mom is absolutely hands mm-hmm. down my role model. She's just been a phenomenal mom and woman that I've just looked up to my entire life, and I'm so thankful that she bore me.
What's an example for a thing or something she says or does that left such an impact on you?
Well, I think the what's the worst thing that can happen has always left an impact on me, because mm-hmm. I ask it in my own head ahead of, you know, big things, that big interviews that seem really high stakes, or I'm freaking myself out about something. But instead, I recognize, okay, look, you got to go for this. It's in your, you've done your work. Go and do it.
It's so great. It's such a great question. I started using it recently as well. And it's amazing how such a simple question can resolve so many internal conflicts.
Yeah, completely. I think it also really helps put things into perspective. My mom wouldn't just ask that question when I was a kid. If I was kind of like, oh, mom, whatever, she would say, no, lay it out for me. What is the worst yeah. thing that could happen if you go for this thing that you really care about? What's the worst thing? You don't get it. Way worse than not getting it, by the way, is not knowing whether you could ever have had that opportunity.
Yeah, that's great. Leads us to our last question. What is the one piece of advice that you would share with your 14-year-old self?
Don't be afraid. Everything will be okay. Just keep going. Keep working hard. Keep asking questions, and everything's going to be okay. And even if it's not on certain days, and it absolutely won't be on certain days, in the long run, it's good.
Great. Thank you so much, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Where can people find you if you want to point people? We talked a lot about the No Limits podcast and other, you know, on social media. Where can people find you?
Sure. Yeah. People can find me everywhere on social media at Rebecca Jarvis. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat. It's all Rebecca Jarvis, R-E-B-E-C-C-A, Jarvis, J-A-R-V-I-S. And I post all about the podcast there. So it'll take you really quickly to No Limits if you're looking for that too.
So good. Thank you so much for taking the time. Do you have a sense for what kind of breaking news you're walking into now?
Well, I'm working on Theranos today, but I'm pretty sure that your listeners will get to hear an interview I just conducted with Joy Gordon. She's the CEO of Dress for Success, and she has a really interesting story. She was a lawyer who, after a call and a few months working with this nonprofit organization, Dress for Success, which helps women get back to work, she quit her job, went a completely different path, became CEO of this nonprofit. And the conversation is about how to fundraise, which is such an important thing for nonprofits, how to get people to buy into your idea, which, again, another really important thing, especially for nonprofits, but for all brands and all people who are working, and how to make a decision that some people might say to you doesn't necessarily make sense, how to go about knowing that to listen to those instincts and go for it.
It's great. So this is going to be the next episode on the No Limits podcast?
Yes, great. Exactly.
Cool. Perfect. Rebecca, thank you so much. You've been super generous with your time in the busy news day. So thank you so much for speaking to us and to the Role Models community. And I hope we can do round two when you have the, let's say, 150th or maybe 200th episode of No Limits.
Let's do it. Shout out to all the Role Models listeners and to you too, David. Like, you're fantastic and I love what you're building and I love the community that you've built around Role Models. So thanks for having me. It's an honor.
Thank you so much. It's very kind of you. All the best.
Thank you.
Bye.
You too.
If you liked this episode, then why not check out one of the previous episodes of the Role Models podcast? We have had conversations with people like Cindy Gallup, who is a former advertising executive turned entrepreneur and a vocal advocate for more diversity in business. Or maybe Cindy Holland, who is the vice president of original content at Netflix, and where she talks about being a leader in a company that she's been with for almost 15 years. Or maybe chef and author Samin Nosrat, who just released a book about how to learn the fundamentals of cooking, and where she shares the story about how she just walked up to a restaurant carrying a letter and then left that restaurant with having a job. If you like to support Role Models because you like it, then please consider subscribing to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. And then please also post a really quick review about what you think, what you like about the show, and maybe even while you're at it, click on the 5-star rating. This really helps the Role Models podcast reach people like you, and also helps the stories of our role models reach more people. If you have any feedback for us, reach out on Twitter. We're at Role Models. And if you have any feedback for me, you can reach me also on Twitter by tweeting @David. Thank you for listening. Until next time.